Another edition of Pittsburgh Pop with Rob Owen and me, Tim Benz. Rob, you can read him at Trib Live, TV Talk, TV Q&A. Check me out every day during the week. Breakfast with Benz. Boy, a lot going on for me on the sports side. A lot going on for Rob on the TV Talk side as well. TV, film, big news this past week since our last podcast when we joined you. The SAG after strike has been resolved. Rob, how did it come to pass? We weren't feeling great about it the last time we spoke, but oftentimes that's the way things go down, right? There's some sort of last minute saber rattling and then poof, all of a sudden everything's resolved.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, the reason I wasn't feeling good about it is because I had been feeling good about it ending for 2 weeks. And then it was like, okay, it's not ending. But it finally did end. And I think the final thing that they had to work out was around AI issues. When the studios made their best, last and final offer, there was a bit about AI that the Screen Actors Guild wasn't thrilled with. And so they needed to tweak that. And they were able to do that in relatively short order as far as the duration of this strike has gone. So yes, we did finally get the end of the strike. The entire negotiating committee voted to approve the deal. The board on Friday was scheduled to vote to approve the deal, and then it has to go to the membership, but they're going to approve the deal. There's no question about that.
What was the AI thing exactly that was the biggest concern? Do you know? Was it a matter of like, the studios are going to build the next Margot Robbie instead of find the next Margot Robbie? Is that what the issue was?
I think it was just trying to protect the actors. It was around language in terms of the protections on the actors so that they could, so that they had to get consent to use elements of the actors. If they were going to build a new person and they took Jennifer Aniston's eyes and Brad Pitt's nose, that they had to get consent to do that. I think I read that was what the issue was. But whatever it was, they've gotten it resolved. You know, as in all negotiations, nobody gets everything they want. But I think that they got a lot of what they wanted. And so now production will ramp up. We're going to see filming return in Western Pennsylvania. Probably January is when Mayor of Kingstown will hit the ground running. They've already opened a production office and they are in pre-production. But as far as actual cameras rolling, that will be January. And then I also reported last week some new news about a new Hulu limited series, sort of a biography of Sammy Davis Jr. from Lee Daniels, who previously shot The Deliverance, a Netflix movie that has yet to be released in Pittsburgh. So pretty soon you will start to see those yellow signs going up with weird names on them that aren't actually the names of the movies, but are secret names that tell crews how to get to set.
Just so long as I can get around the park and back to my house, which always seems to be an issue when these movies are filmed, particularly on the north side.
Right.
I've already got a couple roads shut down around here. Oh, sorry. Did I cut you off? What else?
Oh, no, I thought of one thing that I wanted to share, and that was that a movie shot in Pittsburgh, which, you know, I don't keep as close track of as the TV stuff, but there was a movie that was shot in Pittsburgh. It was actually set in Florida, but it was filmed in Pittsburgh called Drive Away Dolls. And it is directed by Ethan Coen. And that was supposed to open, I think, in September. And then when the actor strike happened, they pushed the premiere date. And so it now has a new premiere date of February 23rd, 2024.
Didn't you post something recently about a Titanic movie that was shot around here, too?
That wasn't me. Somebody else posted that. But there is a Titanic movie that has been in various stages of production for, it feels like to me, 5 years. It's called Unsinkable, and I guess it had its world premiere at the Pittsburgh Film Festival recently. But I don't know when anyone will be able to see it at home. It's very much an indie production. But as a Titanic nerd, I'm curious to see it someday.
Didn't they use like North Park or the Mod?
Yes. Yeah, the pool.
As the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes.
How'd they pull that off, I wonder?
I don't know. I think they shot it at night, so night can be forgiving. And they probably had some backdrops there, or maybe they used some CGI.
Canadian geese come all the way out here to the ocean? Really? I didn't think they could fly that far. Hey, Rob, I wanted to get to something on the topic of pieces that you and I are both into. You're a Titanic nerd, as you just said. I really like World War II pieces, be they television, be they movies, documentary, whatever the case may be. And now there's apparently another arm to the Band of Brothers series, Masters of the Air. Can we talk about that a bit?
Yes, absolutely.
Good tie-in here for Veterans Day weekend, by the way.
That's true. And I imagine that's why they released the trailer for Masters of the Air last week, which we'll embed with the story version of this podcast. Yes, so Masters of the Air, I've been waiting for this thing for 10 years. It was talked about at the time that the Pacific, which was the second in the trilogy that Tom Hanks's Playtone made after Band of Brothers. That was the first one for HBO. Then several years later came the Pacific. And then there was always the plan that they were going to, you know, do this story about the air wars in World War II. And it was at HBO for a long time, just like Band of Brothers and the Pacific. And then ultimately nothing ever came of it. And so they moved the project over to Apple TV Plus, since, you know, Apple has unlimited money. And so they finally filmed it. It stars Austin Butler and Barry Keoghan, if I'm saying his name correctly. And it is yet another World War II epic miniseries that will be on Apple TV Plus, I believe, on January 26th.
Is this in the Pacific Theater or is this in Europe? Do we know? Is it both?
I don't know 100%, but based on the trailer, I would say it's Europe more than the Pacific, just based on what the locations appeared to be.
You and I were both of the opinion that the original Band of Brothers was significantly better than the Pacific. Have you got any read yet as to how this one will stack up, or the tone of it, the make of it? Is it as huge of an ensemble cast as those other two were?
It's a little bit hard to tell from the trailer. They have not provided any screeners yet, but I have let them know I am very interested and will be writing about it when the time comes. But it does look like it is a big budget production. It does not look like they have skimped at all. The focus in the trailer is on a couple of characters, but I would imagine that it's a fairly large cast, just given what we saw in those previous miniseries with Band of Brothers in the Pacific.
What else, Rob? Let's get local. I understand that WTAE is now down to only 99 weather people. Is that correct?
99 weather people on the wall, take one down. No. Yes. So they 2 years ago, they hired Casey Rayner as their fifth meteorologist. And 2 years later, she's leaving the station for reasons unknown. She posted last week that she was leaving, but she left it sort of nebulous. She made it sound like it was her choice not to renew the contract, but she also didn't offer any specifics as to where she was going. Nor did she make herself available for an interview. So I don't really know what really went on there. But yes, they will be down to four. The question is, will they fill that spot or not? Since TAE went to five, KDKA went to five, PXI remains at four meteorologists. So I did ask Jim Parsons what the plan was, you know, go back, stay at five or go down to four, and he did not respond. So we'll just have to watch and see.
You know, I never thought I'd stay in TV and radio and the journalism business long enough, Rob, where you could look at weather crews and compare them to local basketball teams. It's like, I don't know, was she like the point guard or was she the shooting guard? Was she the wing player? Like, I'm not sure what the analogy is for her role.
She was weekend mornings, So do with that what you will.
All right. How about the Food Network? I understand we've got a local tie on the Food Network now, huh?
Yes. So this week, Thursday night, on the Christmas cookie challenge, the champions, returning champions season, a local woman named Jasmine Cho, who previously won $10,000 on the Christmas cookie challenge, is returning. And this time she's paired with another past winner of the Christmas cookie challenge. So Jasmine Cho owns the online bakery Yummyholic, and she's paired with Ricky Webster of Spokane, Washington, in that cookie baking competition that airs Thursday at 9 on Food Network.
Finally, Rob, let's end on sort of a bigger picture topic, and that is the cost of streaming services, streamflation, as it's being dubbed, and how this dovetails with a topic that you and I addressed about a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, and that was Hulu announcing that it was rising in cost and how that
Right.
bundle was going to go down with Disney and everything else. So let's kind of talk about these two topics at once and get on those two parallel tracks.
Sure. So we've got, I think we probably talked back then about how Disney Plus and Hulu are going to be combined and that you're going to be able to access both via one app. And Disney has announced they're going to begin that process in December. Now, they still have to finish negotiations buying out Comcast, which still owns a portion of Hulu. And so that process of evaluating how much that chunk of Hulu is worth is ongoing, but eventually Disney Plus and Hulu will combine. And how that's going to shake out in terms of costs, I don't know exactly, but I think we can pretty much be assured that it will be mean that it will be more expensive. I talked to Carnegie Mellon University information systems professor, who talked about streamflation, the continued rising cost of streaming services. Most recently, Apple TV Plus hiked its monthly rate from $7 a month to $10 a month. And when I talked to the professor, he said that, because of the amount of content these services are all creating, the prices they were charging were woefully low and that it was unsustainable. And so that is why we are seeing these price hikes happening. Now, I know listeners and viewers and subscribers to these services don't want to hear that, but it is what's going to happen. They tried the tech sort of route of let's underprice everything to get everyone in the door and then we'll jack up the price. And so that's exactly what we're going to see happening. And at the same time, because just jacking up the price isn't enough to cover their costs, they're also reducing the amount of original content. So you will be paying more to get less.
So, long story short, Rob, does this lead from streamflation to rebundling? Is that where we're going
Oh,
here?
100%. Yeah, we're going to see. Now, Disney Plus is already doing the bundling. Like if you buy ESPN Plus, Hulu, and Disney Plus as a bundle, it is much cheaper than buying them individually. But what we're going to start seeing that we haven't seen yet is rival services bundling. So you're going to see, and I'm making this up, so don't hold me to it, but Paramount Plus is very much interested in bundling. Max is very much interested in bundling. So I would not be surprised if you see those two services bundling or Peacock bundling with one of those services. Until, of course, there is contraction, and there will be contraction. Either Max or Paramount Plus or Peacock, one of those will merge with another and go away at some point, probably in the next 2 or 3 years.
One other sports note I want to throw out there before we wrap up our podcast today, and I alluded to this once or twice on our more recent podcast, but since the schools have both announced this publicly now, I feel a little bit more comfortable going in depth on it, and I don't even have to say in depth on it, I'll just give you the specifics on it. But Robert Morris University hockey and Duquesne men's and women's basketball both are now on Sportsnet Pittsburgh, beyond just the ESPN Plus platform for Duquesne men's and women's basketball, and beyond Flow Hockey for Robert Morris hockey, which is where those sports previously had only been housed. There's going to be 7 Robert Morris games on Sportsnet Pittsburgh, 5 men's, 2 women's. The women's games They're going to take place. Actually, the first one took place on Saturday, the 4th, against Syracuse. And Robert Morris's women's team takes on Mercyhurst on January the 20th. The first men's game is on November the 25th against Sacred Heart. I'll be on the call for at least three of the men's games, maybe four, depending on when the Steelers-Colts game, if the start time for that game is kind of up in the air still. So I'll be on the call with Mike Pursuta for at least three of those games. I'm looking forward to that. And then on the Duquesne side, men's first game on Sportsnet was last week. We aired with the opener, which is a really good game, a really close game until the end. So hopefully a lot of people saw it. I know a lot of people were texting me about it. And that was a win for Duquesne against Cleveland State. The men's team has nine more games on Sportsnet Pittsburgh, and the women have 10 games. So people were wondering how Sportsnet Pittsburgh was going to populate itself, how they're going to round out the content, how they have such little content, especially until we know what the heck is going on with the Pirates.
Right.
This is a good way to do it. And you know,
that is a great way
to repurpose all these games. They're already taking the coaches show, Rob, for Duquesne. I think I told you the story about how I was doing a show on ESPN Pittsburgh, Countdown to Kickoff, and it's at Park Social, which is on Brownsville Road. And I was sitting there doing the show, and I was over my own shoulder on Sportsnet Pittsburgh. I'm doing the radio show, and over my shoulder, I'm doing the coaches show, which is now back on there. So it's good to see these colleges getting a little bit more airtime. There's sort of a common interest there for Sportsnet Pittsburgh to get the programming and these programs kind of getting out there. And it is an indication to me about how many people still rely on old fashioned cable for sports, Rob, because
and especially in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I feel like it's 200 to 1, the amount of people when it's on a station like Sportsnet Pittsburgh, the reaction I get to, hey, good call of the game, or hey, I was watching here, or hey, I saw you here, as opposed to taking the effort to get on an app, get on your phone, watch it on ESPN Plus. It's still night and day. It really is. I don't know if it's, you kind of alluded to it there, but if it's just a Pittsburgh thing, but it feels very much in Pittsburgh like we are still stuck in that sort of 1990s mode of what cable is.
Yes, yes. Pittsburghers are not early adopters of new technology. So the old technology continues to have a foothold in Pittsburgh.
What do we have coming up on TV Talk and TV Q&A this week?
Let's see. So TV Q&A, why aren't the guests in the fan cave on Nightly Sports Call? Why do they Zoom in? And then TV Talk, Godzilla is back. Have you been following any of the Godzilla movies, Tim?
The last Godzilla movie I probably saw was when baby Godzilla, Godzuki, wasn't that his name? Godzuki, little baby Godzilla.
I could get my 13-year-old in here and he'd tell us, but I don't know.
When the boulder fell on his tail, he used to blow the smoke rings. Do you remember this?
I think you've maybe missed some of the more modern Godzillas have been released, because there's now like this two-track of Godzilla where they continue to make Godzilla movies in Japan, but then Hollywood has been turning out a lot of big-budget Godzilla movies. There was one in 2014, one in 2019, there was Godzilla versus Kong, and now there is a Godzilla series called Monarch, I think Legend of the Monsters, something after Monarch, that is coming to Apple TV Plus this Friday. So
I remember the one where Puffy had the soundtrack with Kashmir. That's what I remember. that's as much of a modern Godzilla reference as I can recall. Yeah, seriously, if you remember when baby Godzilla was introduced this is the old fashioned Saturday morning, get up at 10 o'clock, it's on channel 56 or whatever, you know.
Right.
The infancy of cable, like the early days of cable. You know, like the puppets that sort of move like this all the time, fight like the, you know, that's my recollection of Godzilla movies. And baby Godzilla wasn't able to breathe fire yet. He didn't know how to breathe fire, and Godzilla was trying to train him and he couldn't do it. And there was I think Mothra was attacking and Godzilla was in a bad spot and baby Godzilla didn't know what to do. He couldn't save grown up Godzilla. And then like a boulder fell on his tail and then he could blow fire. And he singed Mothra, and that was just enough of what Godzilla needed to buy time to save the day. So
very good. Well, it's a little more intense and special effects driven in this new series, but there's also a story. It's in you've got both Wyatt Russell and Kurt Russell, father and son actors, playing the same character, one playing him in the 50s and one playing him in the 2010s. So I'll have more on that this week in TV Talk.
All right, so check that out and check me out, Breakfast with Benz. Don't forget to listen on the DVE pregame show for the next Steelers game as well. As the time that most people will be listening to this, we will be still in the process of wrapping up the game against the Packers and looking ahead to the two games in Ohio against Cleveland and Cincinnati. Big times coming up for the Steelers, so read me over the next 2 weeks leading into Thanksgiving at Breakfast with Benz. This is your latest edition of Pittsburgh Pop at Trib Live.